Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
Primarily self-taught, Philadelphian Margaret Garwood started composing at the age of 35. And now in her mid-80s, we'll be celebrating the world premiere of one of her four operas, The Scarlet Letter, presented by the Academy of Vocal Arts November 19th through the 21st. Although primarily self-taught, Miss Garwood earned a bachelor's degree in composition and fulfilled her requirements for a master's from the University of the Arts. She was always prolific and writing works primarily for voice and chamber ensemble, and also four operas for which she has written the complete librettos. She cherishes the words of others as well, great authors like William Shakespeare and E.E. Cummings. And we speak with her today about her inspiration. Welcome, Margaret Garwood, to Crossover.
Thank you very much.
It's really quite exciting to speak with you. We're all buzzing about the wonderful opera that you have written and which will be premiered by AVA on November 19th, The Scarlet Letter. So much to talk about with you, Peg, if I may call you that.
Please do.
You really are self-trained, aren't you? I mean, that's what all of the press says.
Well, I think every composer is self-trained. I think your ear is what trains you.
Yeah, but what do you do with it? I mean, in other words, yes, you hear something.
It just goes in and it influences everything that comes out if you listen enough.
Well, now, did you ever study any music at all?
Well, I was a pianist from the time I was 2 years old. I picked out little things, and I wanted to be a concert pianist. That was the main thing. And it was frowned upon by my parents, let alone being a composer. Even I laughed at a woman composer, you know, Mrs. H.A.
Well, Beach, Amy Beach.
Ha-ha Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a ridiculous thing, so I never even tried. But I really practiced and worked and studied everything about music and the piano. And then just all of a sudden, actually after a 5-year psychoanalysis when I was 35, I started to write music. And I said, oh, that's it. I'm done.
That's fantastic.
I thought it was, yes.
Well, first of all, I think you are a woman of several years. I mean, you've been around for a while.
83 years.
And she, for the audience, looks absolutely phenomenal. And you are phenomenal. But at the time that you were 2 or 4 or 5, I mean, as you say, the years, Mrs. Beach never even used her name until her husband died, and she was also a fantastic pianist. I mean,
yes.
So, I think that was, of course, the rhythm of the times. But for you, that self-discovery in your 30s is also something that happens to people a great deal. They kind of say, wait a minute, this is who I am. But did you ever, you studied piano, so you were a musician. I mean,
yes.
you knew what to do with it.
Yes.
But this whole business of, how did it start? I mean, did you say, oh, I just hear a melody in my mind, or?
Well, I'm very inspired by words, and I was very inspired by E.E. Cummings' poetry. And that's what started me off.
Well, that already is unusual. He never used capitals, I guess.
Well, only for the important things.
I see. Uh-huh. Yeah, he never used capitals. I mean, I see. What were the important things?
Well, love.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote to Mrs. Cummings to get permission to set these songs. And I asked her about the capitals. And I also asked her, would he like his name capitalized? And she says, absolutely. But nobody ever does that.
Really?
Everybody puts the small
letters. It's the E.E. I remember that when I started reading his things many, many years ago. And that's kind of odd as well. I mean, I think it's interesting what he thought of himself and how the world viewed him. You got a bachelor's degree. Is that right?
No. I never studied until in 1974 or something. I was offered a job at Muhlenberg College, but I had no degree. And they said, you have to have a master's degree. So, the University of the Arts offered me, a master's degree, and I would just pass off the bachelor's, which I did. Well, I was in my 40s, so I certainly knew enough about music, so it was not that hard.
But you do have a graduate degree in composition now,
well,
isn't
it? I did get a master's degree.
Okay.
And I was able to teach at Muhlenberg.
Okay. And now, when did the operatic bug bite you?
Well, it was strange. I wrote this one song cycle. The first thing I wrote. I had a recital in New York, a New York debut, I guess you'd call it, with a singer. And we did all American music, half piano and then half vocal. And she sang my song cycle.
I see.
And there was an impresario from Philadelphia in the audience, and he commissioned me to write an opera. And here I had written this one song cycle, and I had just started on the Japanese songs, a very small cycle. Mm-hmm. So I said, of course not. And then I went home, and I began hearing all this music, and so I said, I will. And so I did.
I guess for the audience, do you wake up one day and say, I'm going to write? Is that what happens? I mean, you went through your analysis, I get, and guess, and then you kind of discovered that there was something that you wanted to express, and you had the ability to do it. I mean, is that kind of how it happens?
Well, it just sort of started coming, the poetry and the music, and it just came out.
And the words are the inspiration, or were at least.
They always are for me.
Yes. Yes. Well, rhythm, I guess, in poetry.
Yes, of course.
And, of course, the haiku is, that's also rhythmic, very rhythmic.
Yes. Well, that was a commission.
Oh, that was
by a soprano who wasn't very good. And she had to give a faculty recital. And she commissioned me to do something for her and clarinet and piano. So I made it very limited in range for the voice. And it turned out quite well.
Very structured?
Well,
kind of.
Very haiku-ish. That's all I can say.
That's a good word. I like it. Well, I think that does describe it, though. I mean, because it's very difficult to describe poetry and music in words. But you have taken one of the great novels, of course, of the ages, The Scarlet Letter.
Yes.
And is this your very first opera?
No, the first was The Trojan Women, which I was commissioned to do by the Suburban Opera Company. And then the next was The Nightingale and the Rose for the same opera company. And then when I did this master's program, I got so interested in the literature side of it.
Yes.
And I did a lot of Hawthorne research. And I wanted to do The Scarlet Letter, but I thought, I don't have the maturity, so I'll set all his short stories.
Oh, my goodness.
But, of course, I didn't. Yeah. I did set Rappaccini's Daughter.
Which is that's a full opera?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a short story, but I made it a full opera.
Again, so now I read somewhere that that Nathaniel Hawthorne had envisioned The Scarlet Letter as an opera in once, so he had wanted perhaps to...
Well, I read a lot of Hawthorne scholarship when I took this master's program, and I got so interested in the ins and outs of The Scarlet Letter and Hawthorne and the various ways of looking at Hawthorne. And one of the books said, he quoted him as saying, it wouldn't make a play. He didn't think it would be a good play, but it would make a good opera, he thought.
Was it because the message is operatic in scope, if you know what I mean? I mean, what is the difference between a play and an opera, basically? An opera is not a play set to music.
No, not at all. You get swept away with the opera. The emotions are maybe clearer in the opera than they would be just in the play. I really don't know. I can't second guess him.
I really wonder, just generally speaking, if one says, I'm going to write an opera, how does one approach the subject matter?
Well, I do it with the words. first start writing the libretto.
I was going to say, and that becomes, that in itself is just rhythmic, I would imagine.
Well, I wouldn't have thought to describe it that way, but that makes sense.
Well, again, there's so much to talk about. Of course, this is going to be premiering November 19th. That's the opening night. And Denise Stewart from AVA is here as well. Denise, just tell us a little bit about all the preparation that's involved. This is a huge and exciting project, isn't it?
Well, thank you, Jill. The very exciting thing for AVA is that we are using a large theater, the Merriam Theater, and we have nice big sets built and full scope grand opera treatment for this piece. It's a large cast. Virtually every resident artist at AVA is in it. And we also have a chorus of volunteers from throughout the Delaware Valley. And we also have some child singing actresses from different areas who will be portraying the role of Pearl, who is Hester Prynne's daughter. And we are double cast Pearl, two little girls. One's from Philadelphia, one is from New Jersey. And there's another child role that is not in the novel but is in the opera. And we have two little girls double cast on that role as well. So it's going to be grand opera in a large theater with a full orchestra and a big cast. It's a wonderful sing. Our resident artists are very excited about it. And Dorothy Danner is our stage director. She's a veteran opera director. She directs all over the country. And she's very excited, has some wonderful ideas. And Richard Raub is conducting. Richard is one of our master vocal coaches at the Academy of Vocal Arts. And he also conducted the 2002 Act 1, Scene 1 that AVA did of the Scarlet Letter, of Ms. Garwood's Scarlet Letter. And so he's been chomping at the bit to do the entire opera ever since. He's very excited about it. And if you go into 1920 Spruce Street, you will see lots and lots of activity, people all over the place, big grand opera being staged. It's very exciting.
And how many performances are there?
There are three performances, Friday evening, November 19th at 8 o'clock, Saturday evening, November 20th at 8 o'clock, and Sunday matinee at 3 p.m. on November the 21st.
And tickets are available, of course.
Oh, yes. The tickets are available through the Kimmel Center, kimmelcenter.org, or the Kimmel Center box office. I think I've got that number memorized now, 215-893-1999.
But it's not at the Kimmel Center. It's at the Merriam Theater.
The Merriam Theater is one of the theaters that the Kimmel Center operates.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wonderful. So how do you feel about all this, Peg? I mean, do you believe it's happening, or have you envisioned this for a long
time? Well, I only go one day at a time. I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I won't be there until I'm there.
Now, there's a whole other aspect, again, we've got to bring this in. Of course, this is a very, very... the story is dated because of the mores of the time. And, of course, women were... You finished that sentence.
Repressed.
Yes.
Much as they still are.
Yes. In certain areas. I mean, she could not... She was an adulteress, and that was... And when you compare that to what's going on now with our younger generation, it's laughable. I mean, what's going on now is so free, so open, beyond belief. And then here, I mean, she was just an outcast.
Exactly. But I think she turns out to be the one really good person in the whole thing.
Well, she cared about others who were her in pain.
Yes.
Well, Hawthorne himself was extremely sensitive to that issue.
Absolutely. I think it was very close to his heart.
So this is it's an important story, and always has been, I think, and very profound and passionate. And I suppose is that the way you were impressed with it?
Yes, I was. I was very impressed with the similarity of today and the way that religion dictates sexuality.
Yes.
And the result of that.
But hasn't that, well, I think essentially there are things that are similar, but I mean, things are different today, aren't they, to some degree? Let's say average people.
Well, of course it's different, but look at the way the world is now. It's ready to blow up.
Right.
I mean, I just feel that the repression of the natural impulses that people have are just smothering society.
And yet one feels that some things are going overboard. I think that's, you know, I think that's a reaction to
a reaction formation. Yeah, exactly.
So, but this story is one that is timeless. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah. And, again, when you approach writing the music, are you inspired out of order of the story? In other words, do you kind of say, well, this is the beginning and this is this. I feel from the very beginning the music that I have heard there's a dark undercurrent there right from the very beginning. You feel something is going to happen. It's not all sweetness and light and it's dramatic, very, very dramatic. Also, your style is very reminiscent. As I was saying to you before we started taping, you have to me a very impressionistic style of writing. I certainly hear melodically and harmonically. Your influences are very much from that period.
Well, they're not conscious. When I start to write, I just search for the color of the work, a harmonic color, and I just let it grow. And whatever I've heard all my life, whatever has meant something to me, hopefully comes out in the music.
Well, when did you actually write this? What year?
Well, I was looking through, I keep a journal of my work. And I was looking through it, and I started it as early as 1985. And then I just let it go, and I wrote something else, and then back again to do the libretto in 1991 and then 1997. Mm-hmm. And then I started really to finish it in earnest after the AVA did the first scene.
When did you actually start writing your first music? I mean, at what year was that?
Well, it was 1985.
For the opera, but before the opera, when you started to write. What year was that?
It was 1963.
The reason I'm asking is there was a complete break of style, tonality, and everything. And the 60s and the 50s were a very, very, people were scratching around where do we go from here? So there was a lot of dissonance and a lot of, but you have in your music that whole history of, I guess it's Impressionism and Wagner and, you know, lush and
Puccini.
Opulent and so your life, what I'm saying is you've lived through the period of that tumult.
Oh, yes.
But you've come out with
unscathed.
Yes, yes. It's very, very interesting. And yet it's contemporary. The feeling is contemporary. Very hard to put into words, but it's all there.
Well, I've always been avant-garde because it's always going to come back to this.
Yes.
No matter what, all the scratchings, no matter what they do. Mm. Schoenberg in his later life came back to tonality.
Which is happening now even as we speak. I mean, there's been a turnaround in the last 10 years. So it's very interesting, but you have absorbed the music that you have lived with all your life and the stuff that was there before, if I might say. And kind of digested it and produced something that is, as I said, contemporary, but very, very accessible, I think, in a way. And I can't wait till we see this wonderful, wonderful opera. And we could talk forever. I just wish you the very best on this venture, both AVA and you, Peg, and pleasure and an honor to speak with you. And I hope that, I'm not even going to say this is the first of many performances of The Scarlet Letter, so.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming today.